This week, we explore a strange sect of Christianity in the modern day, looking at it through the lens of modern perspectives and its cult significance. What does Freemasonry tell us about avoiding fanaticism? Then we're going to arm you with a mental weapon to combat ignorance. Christine Wilson Slack delivers an excellent article on exactly what it takes to combat ignorance, the lack of knowledge. And finally, we'll follow that up with something that seems to be at least partially relevant to Christine's article, and that is the idea of the rise and fall of Rome, and if these United States may be headed for a repeat. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 616. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WZY podcast. Through your support, we are able to do this weekly Masonic education. If you're curious on how you can assist the WZY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your various options. We've got those various levels both on Patreon and through PayPal. We also have a shop as well as a bookstore that you can take advantage of. What's happening in the news? You know, not a whole lot happening. On a weird long shot, I was suggested as the worshipful master of Space Novum Lodge for the upcoming 2024 year, and as the fates would have it, I got elected. So I am currently the worshipful master-elect of Space Novum 2024. We've got a great education program planned out for the ensuing year. More will come out on that. I'll be sure to mention a few of those things as we move forward on the podcast. Space Novum is not really a social media or sharing type of lodge, though if you are interested, you can certainly visit. But you'd have to contact the secretary, who used to be me. And I have to give a huge shout out, actually, to the one and only Scott Duball. So it is a special gig, and I really appreciate him stepping up to the plate. And I'm looking forward to a great year. So let's get into the education right away. I've got three articles this week, and I think that they are pretty interesting. Otherwise, I wouldn't be reading them to you. When I had first gotten into Freemasonry, there were some very interesting groups that would crop up within various social media platforms, or in the groups on those platforms, places like All Things Masonry, etc. And sometimes it was very strange because we would find that there were folks from the Moorish Rite who would come in and sometimes very cordial, sometimes very antagonistic. And at least on one or two occasions, we've seen some postings from Moonies. So imagine my surprise when I saw an article that was written on philosophicalsociety.org titled, "Who Are the Moonies? A Story of Assassinations, Second Comings, and Mass Weddings." And, of course, the Masonic Philosophical Society is dedicated to recapturing the spirit of the Renaissance. As always, I'll have a link back to the original article in the show notes, but let's get into this one. Who Are the Moonies? A Story of Assassinations, Second Comings, and Mass Weddings. By MPS writer Joe, published back in July of 2023. Under usual circumstances, the Unification Church, colloquially known as Moonies, might be characterized as a global religious group with an intricate and controversial past. However, in the aftermath of the shocking assassination of former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, this religious organization finds itself thrust back into the global spotlight. Armed with a homemade gun and a self-reported grudge, the 41-year-old gunman fired two deadly shots before being arrested. Why had he targeted Abe? Likely due to the former politician's alleged links to the church, Abe had appeared as a paid speaker at multiple church-related events. Forget the shadowy dealings of the Yakuza, the Moonies, is a bizarre world of cult practices and a web of controversy. Let's unpack the details. Who are the Moonies? The inception of the Unification Church dates back to 1954, when Reverend Sun Myung Moon established it in South Korea. Officially named the Family Federation for World Peace and Unification, the organization's teachings stemmed from Moon's claim of a vision he received from Jesus Christ at 15 years old. In this vision, he was supposedly directed to complete Christ's unfinished mission on Earth, ushering humanity into a state of sinless purity. Moon's staunch anti-communist stance was critical in building relationships with influential conservative politicians worldwide, underpinning the church's political ethos and driving its global expansion. The Unification Church experienced rapid growth throughout the 1950s and 60s thanks to the dedication of its missionaries. Membership numbers rose from an initial 100 to nearly 10,000 within a few years. By the 1980s, the church claimed a staggering 3 million followers globally, with significant populations in Japan and the United States. They gained recognition primarily for their mass wedding ceremonies known as the Holy Marriage Blessing Ceremony. In this ritual, Moonies believed marriage cleansed couples from the sin inherited from humanity's past and provided any future offspring with a clean, moral slate. If it looks like a cult and talks like a cult. However, along with this expansion came escalating scrutiny. As the organization's influence broadened, so did the doubts surrounding its business practices and recruiting methods. Critics, which included ex-members of the church, began to liken the organization to a cult, accusing it of manipulative financial techniques, deceptive recruiting tactics, and in some cases, abusive practices. Among the most vocal critics was Stephen Hassan, a cult expert and former Moonie himself who raised concerns about the Unification Church's methods. The church also found itself in the legal crosshairs when the U.S. Supreme Court permitted two former members claiming to have been tricked into joining and donating to the organization in 1989 to seek punitive damages. The plaintiffs settled the lawsuit out of court. The Unification Church's anti-communist doctrine allowed it to foster ties with influential conservative figures globally. Notably, these connections included former Japanese Prime Minister Nobusuke Kishi and his grandson, the recently assassinated former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Abe himself had appeared as a paid speaker at events affiliated with the Unification Church, signaling a continued relationship between the church and influential political figures. Fast forward to the present. The church is again under public scrutiny following allegations tied to the tragic assassination of Shinzo Abe. The accused gunman's mother was found to be a member of the Unification Church. Reporters suggest that a substantial donation she made to the church over two decades ago led to the family's financial ruin, leading her son to harbor a deep grudge, ultimately driving him to assassinate Abe. In the wake of this event, the church swiftly condemned the assassination, reiterated its commitment to peace and unification, and sought to distance itself from the allegations. A cult following. Today, the precise number of church members is uncertain, but experts believe it has significantly dwindled since Moon died in 2012, compounded by a subsequent leadership schism within his family. Nevertheless, the Unification Church remains an active entity. There are ongoing reports of individuals who feel they've been scammed or coerced by the organization. In Japan, a group of lawyers actively represents former church members and continue to assist individuals who believe the church has manipulated them. Despite the reduction in membership, controversies, and legal challenges, the church has left an indelible mark on the annals of modern religious movements. It serves as a potent example of the interplay between faith, power, and personal agency in the contemporary world. The Unification Church, or the Moonies, holds a controversial and intriguing place in the tapestry of religious history. Its story continues to unfold with recent events in Japan and ongoing legal battles. The Church's influence, whether viewed positively or negatively, is sure to endure in the years to come. As with all religious organizations, the task is to navigate the delicate balance between faith and skepticism, and to seek understanding amidst the complexity. This was an interesting article to read. some people out there might say, oh, you know, you're bringing religion into Masonry, or what does this have to do with Freemasonry? What it has to do with Masonry is essentially part of the seven liberal arts and sciences. Learning about other religions and things of that nature are always going to fall under Masonic education, because it assists us in understanding and it assists us in looking through the lens of others. In this particular case, as a follow-up to the article, I went online and I searched around for articles related to any sort of controversies that may have happened between Freemasonry and the Moonies. And you know, the only things that I could typically find were psychologists who were citing examples of various offshoots religious groups that appeared to be cults, like the Moonies, and ultimately they would come to a place where they say something about Freemasonry being the anti-cult, which is likely to be true since Freemasonry is all about allowing one to find their individual path, as long as it leads them to a better you. The next piece I'd like to read is called Combating Ignorance, and this was published back in May of 2020 on UniversalFreemasonry.org. This is by our good friend and contributing author to How to Charter a Lodge, Christine Wilson Slack. This is a topic I believe that is so pertinent for today due to the large schism we have in the United States regarding what we might consider subjective and objective truths. And I suppose much more could be said on the topic, and perhaps I'll write something about that, but until then, from time to time, I think we need reminding of how to do exactly what Christine is proposing in this piece. So let's dig into it. Combating Ignorance by Christine Wilson Slack. What is ignorance? Why is it so damaging? And how can we combat it? Quote, it is only necessary to make war with five things: with the maladies of the body, the ignorances of the mind, with the passions of the body, and with the seditions of the city and the discord of families. Pythagoras. Science is not a philosophy or a spiritual path. It's a way of behaving in the world. It is a way of thinking that encourages logic, reason, information, and communication in such a way as to explore the world in wonder and discovery. It is unfortunate that polarization and nationalism, tribalism if you will, have made quote-unquote fake news and quote-unquote alternative facts part of our everyday life now. It is a reality with which we must learn how to navigate. It is not only learning to dig through facts and figures, research and media hype, but it is learning that we must sometimes unlearn. It begins with the idea of we must know is a fallacy. What we must do is begin to swim in our own ignorance and be cognizant of what we do not know. To be blunt, if we want to fight ignorance, we must start with our own. We listen every day to people who, by virtue of their self-appointed knowledge, without the science or experience to back it up, discard the rigorous work that scientists have done to establish or debunk our knowledge of nature. Chemists, astrophysicists, climatologists, oceanographers, biologists, geneticists, and nutritionists have all been sidelined when their messages did not fit the narrative of corporate interests or media hype. Those that seem to have the most money, most market share, or most brand have the last say. We separate the educated as elitists and the corporate interests as the common man. Who would have our best interest at heart? To be very clear, expertise is not the same thing as elitism. A real expert and scientist knows where the knowledge boundaries lie. They know that they know less than they have researched and are on a quest to explore. They are developing theories and testing them, asking what did work and what didn't. They know that the fruits of their labors may take years, decades to bear truth, and most likely lead to more questions. Elitism, on the other hand, is the belief or attitude that individuals who form an elite, a select group of people with an intrinsic quality, higher intellect, wealth, special skills, or experience, are more likely to be constructive to society as a whole and therefore deserve influence or authority greater than that of others. They are the self-appointed leaders or gurus that have the answers. A scientist may be an elitist, but that is not a reflection on science, but on the character of the individual, or lack thereof. Having just finished the documentary Behind the Curve on Netflix, I found it extremely interesting to listen to both sides of the debate on the flat earth theory. There are those in the flat earth community who truly believe that science has let them down, that they have the truth and the science to back it up. What was extremely interesting was to hear the scientists remark about the groups of contrary thinkers. There was no consideration or elitism of any of the scientists interviewed. There was no pity or condemnation. It was a true desire to not ignore or sideline the discussion, but to engage in it. It was about bringing people together rather than considering it an us and them situation. This was not about belief and fact. It was about education, knowledge, combating ignorance. Freemasonry has an interesting take on the ideas of nature and science as they are combined with philosophy and a search for truth. It is one of the few places that, it seems, both can come together to discuss and debate with a very open narrative. Science is valued as much as the experiential. Physics and metaphysics coexist in conversation and thought. Nothing is off limits. These conversations, whether in a lodge meeting or in a social gathering, at study groups or philosophical study centers, are the ways we fight ignorance, if we are willing to listen. I recently attended a study group where the topic was considering whether or not humanity had an influence on climate change. I was dead certain that humans influenced nature's cycles. How could it not? There are 7 billion people in the world occupying space, consuming resources, and polluting the world around them. It was a belief, and I knew it. However, I challenged myself to come with an open mind and not make a judgment before entering the room. I am not, by training, a climatologist, a meteorologist, geologist, or any other kind of ologist. I know high school level geology and freshman college science. Let's face it, I know nothing. What did I bring in my own attitude and readings from media and pseudoscience journals aimed at producing a message swinging one way or another? Being out of school for many years, I also felt the pride of age. I knew something of the world, darn it. I really felt like know thyself was part of my vernacular. I admit to the conversation bringing my opinion around to a more moderate view rather than to a specific side of the debate. The presenter discussed scientific findings I had not considered and geologic facts of which I had absolutely no knowledge. I learned about ice ages, findings in the melting of current glaciers, ice core samples, geologic timescales, and historical facts of global significance. I won't say that my mind was changed. I will say that I walked out with a broader idea of questioning what I have been told and learning the truth for myself. I learned that what I had was a belief, not evidence. If I was going to change my ignorance, I needed to do the work myself. This is where, to me, the collision of science and Freemasonry are at their best. Freemasonry is a mystical school, an initiatory rite that brings about the idea that the human being is nature. And the best way to understand nature and the mysteries of life and death is to study nature. How to study nature? Ancient Greek mystery schools, according to Blavatsky, are not a unique system, but based on the spiritual structure of the universe, of which it is important to understand nature. They are inextricably linked, the spirit and nature perhaps even one and the same. Freemasonry, as a modern descendant of these mystery schools, seeks to take the core of nature and spirit and propel the human into learning that both reside within humanity. And it is the Freemason's job to not only continue to seek truth, but also seek capital letter truth. It is to always ask questions from knowing yourself to knowing the world and doubt everything. It is a respect for the scientific process as much as it is for our own process. We are 7 billion experiences, and all are equally valid. Else, why are we having them? For the ancient philosophers, ignorance was the opposite of good. To both Aristotle and Plato, no one does wrong willingly, but only out of ignorance. Socrates had his own methods for combating ignorance, and many of these principles can be found in Freemasonic ritual and education. from continuous learning and making a daily advancement in education to providing education rather than criticism, the Freemason becomes a scientist of the world. Freemasons build on Socrates' idea that one should, quote-unquote, know thyself, in that they are lacking in knowledge, and that we have no idea what is best for others. The center point is the key to balance, in all things, but especially to combating ignorance. A measured approach, curious yet mindful. Lastly, I think Socrates was most right when he said that ignorance is inevitable. When Socrates said, quote-unquote, I know nothing except the fact of my ignorance, what he was saying was that he was not ignorant of all things, but aware that he was ignorant of all things. He knew that he would be forever ignorant, and it was only through perseverance that he could become, quote-unquote, good. I think that last line is interesting because it brings about remembering, I should say, making good men better. As the tagline of Masonry has been for many, many years, making good men better, I still think Nick Johnson's Making Better Men Good is a better version of that. However, some great points in this article, and I think Christine makes a great point in that she says she's seeking out knowledge that she didn't have, and there's a certain amount of surrender that comes with that. And when she says it's important to do your own research, it's not the same as, you know, when you're online somewhere and somebody says something egregious and you say that's ridiculous and they say, do your own research, bro. That's like my favorite. And as soon as somebody says that, it's usually over. But to each their own. But I'd like to move on to another piece, which I think sort of ties into this idea of a growing sense of ignorance. Now, let's take a step back and think about some science for just a moment. We have in society today perhaps a growing sentiment of ignorance, which then breeds what some people would consider a force for good to combat the ignorance. But the extreme counteractivity to the ignorance is in itself just as chaotic. And so this breeds the idea of chaos. And in thermodynamics, we talk about this idea of entropy and the proliferation of chaos in the enclosed system. And certainly, if one might look at this through the lens of something like socionomics, we see a greater probability that on a large scale, chaos is only going to grow unless what? I don't have the answer there. But where this chaos sort of leads up to a crescendo is echoed in many of the various civilizations that have risen and fell. One looks no further than something like Rome. You know, the United States has been around for almost 250 years. We celebrate this on 2026. Nobody's lasted this long. That should give us all pause. Is this great experiment perfect? No, it cannot be. Are we in danger? I think Ben Franklin, the anecdote about what he said upon leaving the Continental Congress when somebody, you know, asked, do we have a republic or a democracy? And he said a republic, blah, 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 blah. And there's a story about the setting sun that was carved on the back of his chair. And they said, is the sun rising on America or setting? And he said, today it's rising. Meaning that perhaps there's this idea that it can go either way at any time. We certainly do seem to be riding the razor's edge today. And of course, all it takes for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing, right? So let's look at the next piece here, called The Rise and Fall of Rome. Are we headed for a repeat? And this was by the first author that we read earlier in this episode, MPS writer Joe. And this was published not too long ago, just back in March of 2023. Let's check it out. The Rise and Fall of Rome. Are we headed for a repeat? Rome, the greatest Western civilization of all time, the civilization all others look up to. Its military conquests, engineering feats, and cultural contributions continue to shape our world today. After all, there's a reason the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., or the Bank of England wouldn't look out of place in first century Rome. But, as spectacular as its rise was, its collapse was equally devastating. Generations of historians have dissected every document and fragment to decipher precisely what went wrong. To understand that most troubling lesson, that everything that rises must fall. So why did Rome collapse? How did the largest empire in the world had ever seen, fragment? And will it happen to us? These questions have been debated for centuries, and the real answers are not always clear-cut. In this article, we'll explore the rise and fall of Rome and consider whether there are any lessons we can learn from its collapse that might be applicable to our own society. The collapse of Rome. From the Colosseum to the Pantheon, the legacy of the Roman Empire can still be seen and felt in the world today. The date given for Rome's collapse is normally 476 CE, when the Germanic king of the Torsilingi deposed Romulus Augustulus. In reality, the fall of Rome was not a single event. Rome suffered endless crises in the 3rd century. In response, they gradually debased the currency until, by 265 CE, there was only 0.5% silver in a denarius compared to pure silver in the early days of the empire. Logistical and administrative costs of managing such a colossal empire mounted, eventually causing collapse. Furthermore, from 250 CE, a 300-year period of climate variability began, leading wild shifts in precipitation and temperature. These climate upheavals also affected the Gauls and Germanic barbarians, who raided and sacked the city. It was death by a thousand cuts. The collapse of complex societies. The idea of a society collapsing is not a new one, and many historians and scholars have studied the factors that contribute to societal collapse. In his 1988 book, The Collapse of Complex Societies, anthropologist Joseph Tainter suggests that civilizations expand. They must become more complex in order to deal with the various problems that arise. However, complexity requires energy. As the society expends more and more energy to maintain its complexity, the returns diminish over time. Eventually, a part of the system breaks or the environment shifts, and the complex system is unable to respond rapidly enough, leading to a total collapse. The Roman Empire was not alone in its collapse due to its complexity. The Maya civilization also faced a similar fate. They built complex agriculture, irrigation, and trade systems, but their success ultimately led to their downfall. As their population grew, they cleared more and more land, but eventually they had to clear too much. Deforestation led to soil erosion, which destroyed their ability to produce food. Without sufficient food, the population declined and the complex society collapsed. It's not just environmental factors that can contribute to societal collapse. Tainter argues that as societies become increasingly complex, the benefits become smaller and smaller. The resources need to sustain the complexity become more and more significant while the benefits diminish. Eventually, the society reaches a point where it can no longer sustain its complexity, and the system collapses. The challenges we face. So, are we like Rome? There are definite parallels between our own society and that of ancient Rome. In some ways, our society is even more precarious, relying on a vast number of inputs, each of which functions as a limiting factor. If we did not have one, everything would stop. The pandemic exposed some of these limitations, as just-in-time supply chains and global manufacturing left many nations vulnerable. Yet COVID-19 had a death rate blow of 1%. What if the next catastrophe is even worse? As we continue to expand and develop our own civilization, we have to be aware of the risks of complexity and the challenges of maintaining our systems over time. We may need to choose between ever-increasing complexity and longevity. If we wish to survive, a simpler life may be the only solution. Something to make you think. There is often this idea of looking to the past. You'll find this, you know, parents or grandparents and things. Is generally what happens is there may and usually is a sort of, gosh, how do I even put this to be very polite? I guess I just have to be blunt, that in many cases, it is difficult for the human mind to adhere to adjust, to conform to reconcile or rectify the changes that happen around them. Because these changes are different. They're not what they grew up with. And so we're left with thinking about things sort of in this rosy glasses kind of way. Looking at history through those rose-colored glasses, the rose color tends to make us forget about the atrocities of the past, and when we put the past on a pedestal without stipulation, it is offensive to humanity. However, something in the past might just be what we need. And Brother Joe here in this piece says we should think about things to survive, and the answer may be a simpler life. I want to say I agree with this. Obviously, I don't know, but it seems like life sure is complex. It reminds me of a recent TikTok that I saw, comedic in tone, and it started off with something like, "We were never meant to know this much."
There's too much knowledge.
We were never meant to know this much. It's truly impossible to keep track of everything.
My brain is constantly bombarded by information that I don't have the capacity to retain or learn. We're filled with facts, but have no idea how to interpret them or understand why they're true. We're continuously hit by a barrage of information and are shooting it back straight from the hip. The internet's where we come to have people condescend to us about things they learned yesterday. I'm an expert in nothing. I don't remember where I learned anything. I can't focus at all, and I don't even have ADHD. My most commonly cited sources are an article I saw, this podcast I listened to, and my friend's friend who I was talking to this past weekend. In with the entire history of conflict in the Middle East, and out with my cousin's wife's name, and what she does for a living. Hello, Golden Bachelor, contested names and ages. Goodbye, whatever medicine my wife is allergic to. It's awesome I know Travis Kelce stands on vaccines, but totally forgot what a safe PSI for my tires is. My default state is confused, ignorant, or mentally exhausted. It's easier than ever to cherry-pick facts to support whatever opinion you have. If you made it this far, stop scrolling and go outside.
And this is so true. Like, the human machine is a complex machine and has a limitless sort of bandwidth of the brain, and we are using the human machine for things it was never meant to be used for. It's kind of like using a screwdriver in ways it should never be used for. Like, maybe you're using it as a pry bar. Okay, you can get away with that. You can use it to tighten screws. That's what its intended use is. Maybe you turn the screwdriver upside down, use the butt of it to drive nails into a soft wall. That's not really its intended purpose, right? And it's somewhat damaging to the human form, or in this case, the screwdriver. So we're left wondering, perhaps there is some sort of boundary line, some limit lines. Maybe the point within the circle is something that we can consider here in a different context. Maybe simpler is better. I don't know if I'll get hit for this or what, but I'll share a link back to the original TikTok, but I'm going to try to throw the audio from that in because I think you'll find it kind of funny. My thanks goes out to the producers, legacy partners, contributors, and fellows of the WCY podcast. If you want to learn how you can assist the WCY podcast, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your various options. That's it for this week. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.